Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good afternoon, good day to everyone out there in Living and Thriving Land. It's Rusty, and God, I am so grateful to live in paradise. It is so beautiful today. The weather, oh my gosh, it's bright and sunny and beautiful, and the trees are bending with the breeze of the ocean. The ocean is literally as clear as my blue eyes, and oh, wow. I had a terrific lunch today at Stumpass Marina in Inglewood with a friend of mine, Christine. And it just like, oh, my gosh, I can't even tell you. Life is beautiful and it is to be enjoyed. And if you cannot find any aspect of your life to enjoy, you've got to find a new place to be. We are, you know, meant to have joy and peace in our life. And I'll tell you, you know, coming from a survivor of rape and abuse and a terrifically abusive marriage and trying to raise my beautiful daughter in a new place, it's been a hard role, but it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful right now. Life is gorgeous. I literally snuggle up with my dogs every day and the babe. And it coats my house every morning, so there's like this coolness, and you want to snuggle deeper into your bed, and you just want to have your flannel on, and dogs just, they have their best sleep when they're snuggled up. My daughter is going to be a freshman in high school in just a few weeks, and that's freaking me out. And other than that, it's just a beautiful life. I have to tell you how excited I am. I'm like totally jazzed. I've had so much coffee today. I know you can hear it in my voice because Zoe's on. Finally, we've tried this like a bazillion times and she's on, and she and I have so much in common. And it's nice to meet somebody who has a very similar story and who's able to speak out and to encourage and inspire other people to do better, be better. You know, we're not going to be perfect people ever. Nobody is. And we're not going to do things right. We never do. But we are going to be the best versions of ourselves, and we're going to keep trying to be the best version that we can be. And I'm so excited to finally have Zoe on because we have so much to talk about. Tonight, I am cooking for my friend Susan. We're doing a shrimp stir fry. And I had calamari, gluten-free calamari. Unbelievably okay. Not perfect, not like Dante's in New Hampshire, but it was pretty darn good. And in a few weeks, I will be speaking in Jacksonville, Florida. So hop onto my Facebook page or my LinkedIn page or my Instagram or my Twitter and check it out. I will be speaking at the Jacksonville Gluten-Free Event Living. She changed the name, so I'm not quite 100% on it at this point. What she changed it to? It is, bear with me. I'm scrolling through my Facebook page. Millions of people, boom, boom, boom. I think it's Living Free, Gluten Free, something. Oh. Dun, dun, dun. They now have gluten free marijuana, just saying. I think it's out in Colorado. So, you know, snark, snark. Just kidding. Dun, dun, dun. Her new, it's Living Free Expo. Living Free Expo in Jacksonville, Florida. That will be in May something. Jacksonville, Florida is May 18th. It's going to be fantastic. I'm going to be there not only as a volunteer, but also as a speaker. And I hope that more volunteers in the Jacksonville or east coast of Florida can, like, chime up, because it's such a fun event. And the little kids who get to go and eat whatever they want to, amazing. Their eyes just sparkle and their lives just open up because they don't feel different. It's one place where if you have food allergies, you don't feel different. You just feel like part of the family, and it's really, really cool. So check it out, Living Free Expo Food Allergy Resource Events, Jacksonville, Florida, May 18th, Raleigh, North Carolina, August 10th, Knoxville, Tennessee, September 28th. I am so there. Love it. The food is amazing. The samples are amazing. The people are amazing. And, you know, I'm a love bug, so I'm all about hugs. And that's all that event's about. So check that out. And what else is going on in Rusty's Land? It's crazy, crazy busy all the time. If you want to call in and just chat with me, that's awesome. 929-477-1165. Guess what? It's me. Amy's on kind of a sabbatical because she has a grandkids and dance and drama club, and Amy's just in her crazy world. So she probably will not be on until later this year. But Young Living's still living and young, and they have lots of new supplies and lots of new products, and I'm really excited about that. But let's see. I've got to... Not sure what's going on with Blog Talk Radio. They're kind of ticking me off lately. Not very, very clear anymore. Hold on one second. I'll tell you who's on next week, and I'm going to throw in Zoe because I'm so excited to talk to her. Dun, dun, dun. Let's see. Superman, where are we? But hopefully by the end of the show, I can tell you who's on next week, because unfortunately Blog Talk's being really bizarre. I don't know what their deal is. They're not showing me future, only past. So I'm going to let Zoe on because she has a lot to tell us about, and I'm super excited. She has been doing so much with, you know, sharing her life and doing wonderful things to inspire and encourage other people to just keep moving forward. And that's my bag, man. You want to play my bag? That's it. Zoe, are you there?
Hi, Rusty. Yes, I am. Hi.
Finally. High five. Hello. Hug. Virtual. Amazing.
Hope springs eternal. Yes.
Amen.
Hey, I was so moved when I was reading on your site about your background, that you too, as an adult, had to save yourself from a domestic violent situation and had to take your daughter out of that to save yourself and your daughter. And I think I wrote back saying I was the daughter in that scenario.
Wow.
And it just rang my bell because I know what it's like when you have to run for your life. So my sympathies are with you, and I'm so glad that you too made it on the good side of that.
We made it on the temporary side of that. We're still very temporary. We're still on the ready to move if we have to. The laws, domestic violence laws and child abuse laws, are not what they should be considering. That's 2019. So we have one.
Yeah,
one,
well, they weren't too hot in 2060 either.
Oh, I can imagine.
There wasn't much to
trust me.
There wasn't much to save. The the kids.
Yeah.
Well, well, I figured that I lived most of my life as a so-called well-adjusted survivor of child abuse, and I was eventually placed in a loving foster home at age 13 with after three different times in the courts trying to get protection from my abusive mother and my she was married seven times, and some of my stepfathers were monsters. But finally, at 13, I got a foster family. At 18, I was adopted. I graduated from college. I married my college sweetheart. I had a family, and I still have a family, and things were going marvelously for Zoe. I just, you know, didn't look back and went forward. And in 2005, I had a breakdown. I had a major breakdown. I lost four jobs in rapid succession, and I couldn't figure out why there was just noise in my head, and I started throwing up all the time, and I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I was crying, and the surgeon I was working for at the time said, "I think you have a memory issue. I think you need help." So I went to my doctor, and they did a battery of tests, and I was diagnosed with major clinical depression and memory failure. And my doctor, she turned to me and said, "You will never get your daily functional memory back unless you write down what happened to you and face it."
Right. Right.
And so I wrote from then on for 2 years. Just pictures. I'm very visual. I just write the pictures of what happened, little vignettes, and I had hundreds of them. And then I didn't know what to do with it, so I sat on it. And in 2013, when my adopted father was on his deathbed, I promised him that I would finally finish the story of our remarkable relationship, of how that family came into my life and saved me. And then I started getting a wonderful lady, Janice Harper, she's a writer, to work with me on my manuscript. And we got it into a book, Driving in the Dark, a Childhood Memoir. And in 2015 and then in 2017 was a later edition. And then I wrote a play based on my book to show people what it's like that little kids do can survive. They are resilient, and how I made my decisions as a little one. And so now I got my memory back. I'm retired, but I can now be back in theater and remember lines. So I figure I've come through the fire, and I've got the best of all possible worlds right now. I'm not less because of what I went through. I have more. I have more sympathy. I have a more encouragement for people that, yes, we can make it past this block. So, and when I read that you had to fight your demons, boy, it really rang a bell with me.
Yeah, it's nice to actually meet a fellow person who's had to walk a similar path, because not a lot of us have the ability to be open and clear and awesome about our story. You know, a lot of us just say, okay, it's the past, we're behind it, we're not going to go there, there's no reason to go back there. It's too painful, it's too this, it's too that. And quite frankly, I wear it as a flag, because I'm like, you know what, I've been there, I've done that, I've been raped, I was raped at 3 years of age, you know, I've had a gun held to my head, I've been shot, my ex-husband was extraordinarily abusive, he's abusive to my daughter. I have a crack in my forehead from having a baseball bat. Excuse my dog. That's part of the show.
I have Labradors.
Yeah, I used to raise pit bulls. These are actually new. So there is this whole ideology that when you go through something very traumatic, it needs to be hush-hush and behind the doors. And I'm I'm the person who's like, no. You know, I have these beautifully amazing scars and flaws, and I've gone through a lot of poopy caca things, but, you know, I'm going to speak out because there's somebody like Zoe, there's somebody like Rusty, there's somebody like, you know, whatever, that have gone through, and we need to kind of just, like, hug each other and say, okay, I hear you, we're good, I got you,
yeah,
I understand, I relate, and we're good.
Right, a lot of folks I have found, especially in foster care, somehow those kids are tarnished. There's something wrong with a kid in foster care because obviously
I'm totally beaten up.
Oh yeah, and that is, it's so wrong. We are worthy of love. No one is not worthy of love, and I had to learn that. My counselors that I had throughout my life, her name was Abigail, and she said, you know, Zoe, you don't have to be perfect in order to be good enough to be loved. And that helped me
so much.
I was so,
so
desperate to have love from my mother, who couldn't give it to me, that I tried, you know, acts of love, and I tried so hard to be perfect so that they would accept me, and it never happened until I came to my foster family, and it proved that I was good enough to be loved.
Well, and what is really ironic about our stories is mine took a twist. My foster family adopted me and then turned on me when I went to leave my ex-husband. And so I have no connection at all. I've totally blocked them in any aspect of my life. And it was amazing to feel like there could be unconditional love, there could be a family, there could be somebody, you know, that my biological vessel was just a vessel when my foster family adopted me. But it turned out that their adoption was just not truthful. It was an honest level of pain there because here you are trying to open yourself up to a new opportunity after all of the years of pain to find out that they're no different than the biological force that brought you here. So that's where my story turned. But you have a different relationship with your foster family. You're still really close, yeah?
Well, I live in Portland, Oregon. They live in, the remainder of the family live essentially in the Seattle area. Both of my adopted parents have passed. I miss them daily. I hear them in my head and then feel them in my heart, so I know I'm not alone.
Yeah.
They gave me the ability to save myself. They gave me the ability to be healthy enough that I could forgive for me. Not that I forgave Zoe for what she did to me or the men that she brought into my room at night or the beatings that I suffered under her hands. But with the love and the acceptance of my adopted family, I was able to just say, I acknowledge the pain that was there, but I love my little self and I forgive them just because I love myself enough to not carry them around in my head all the time. And I didn't want to give them rent in my head. So I felt free from that. And especially after I wrote the book, it really gave me an appreciation for the little person that I was and that I wish as an adult I could just hug that little person and say, you were always just fine, Mary Zoe. There was nothing really wrong with you. It was outer circumstances. When they told me to my face they didn't want me anymore and couldn't take care of me and put me in the youth center because I was inconvenient for them, and I spent time there alone and terrified, I heard a voice in my heart and head, this is just as clear as you're speaking to me now, I heard in the dark when I was crying, I love you, Mary Zo, and you'll be all right. Now go to sleep. I heard that. I went to sleep, and the next day, the court put me with the Dimmicks, my adopted family, my ultimately adopted family. And it was just, I have been the luckiest person on this planet, because even in my horrible bad luck, even when I was beaten, even when I was kept up at night and I couldn't get to sleep and my mother would not let me do my homework so I'd be shamed in school, I got a good outcome. And in the book, I go through how all this transpired and how lucky and how grateful I am for surviving. And when I tell in church groups, when I tell a lot of the ladies that I meet what happened to me, this one lady, it's happened to me time and time again. I've had people stand up, they can barely speak, and they're so moved, they say, this woman, she said, I'm 80 years old, and I was abused since I was the youngest throughout my formative years, and I got out of the house and got married, and I never told a soul whatever happened to me. And she said, to this day, I haven't told anyone, but I want what you have. I want the calmness in your heart. I am going to write down and face what I did, and I'm going to tell my loved ones and my grown children so that it's not a hidden thing anymore, because I want the freedom that you have. And that just blew me away. I just stood there and cried, and I just held the lady. It was just so touching. But I just, you know, it came to be, and I am so grateful that I got the help that I needed. Hello?
Right. Nope, I'm listening. I just have to mute you because my dogs are getting really excited. I live in the Gulf Coast of Florida, and we have this really crazy lizard. And it's Jurassic Park, and
Ooh. The
wind is blowing, and it's it is par for the course. You have your spiders, you have your lizards, you have your birds, whatever. And I have a new puppy who we rescued, and she just it has a lot to say about this lizard. She's very unhappy. So I keep muting you so that you can tell your story without Pepper's 2 cents over there with her wisdom and puppiness.
Well, dogs are the best people I know. When I was there,
I find that if
when I was
my
10,
dog doesn't trust somebody, I don't trust them either. Yeah.
Exactly. I had a German Shepherd when I was 10, and my biological mother named him Satan, and they should have named him Angel Face or Kissy Poo, because he was the most loving dog, and when things would go south and it was violent at home, he and I would hide together, and I would hide behind him. He would protect me. And then when I finally saw Zodi the last time, when I got a chance to see her when I was in college, I saw this old silverish dog, and it was my dog, Satan. He was still alive, and I knelt down in front of him, and I put my arms around him, and I said, Satan, you remember me, buddy? You remember me? And he kissed me. He knew. And Zodi said, well, my God, he surely knows you. I mean, he doesn't let anybody get that close. And so, yes, dogs are the best people you can ever know.
They really are. They only provide nothing but love. And, you know, they as much as they like to sniff butts, they want to know everything. And they're joyous. You know, I wake up to dog butts every morning, and it's quite, you have to be a dog lover to get it, but I'm like, they snuggled into me because I'm part of the pack, because they love me that much. Good. We're good, right?
Yeah, we're good. Yes. I've had dogs all my adult life because they are by far the best people I know.
Exactly right. They really are. So, Zoe, I'm so grateful to have you on, but unfortunately, as time is what it is, we're running out of it. And I want everybody to know where they can find you and more information about you, because you are an inspiration to so many people. I can't even tell you how excited I was to finally have you on and grateful, because you know what? You've gone through it. You've done it. You've been there. You got the mug, the T-shirt, and you're so sweet.
Thank you. I am so grateful to be here. I am so grateful to share, to make other people feel better. You know, it's just, I know what it feels like, and I don't want anybody to feel that bad anymore. And I'm just really grateful. They can reach me at zoenicholas.com. And I have under my name, I have my complete theatrical performance on YouTube, and you can get any of my my books on my book is on Amazon. It's in Kindle format. It's in a soft cover book. I did an audio book. I narrated it myself. And then I wrote the play, and I performed it to live audiences, and got a video of it on YouTube. So I figure that I've got it in different formats, so people can access that information as easy, and as the way that's least painful for them. And I'm really glad that you let me come on to your program, and I'm sorry it was such a by guess and by golly, but we finally made it.
But you know what? And I'm glad you brought it up that way, because that's why I love you so much, and I'm probably one of your largest fans at this point. But by guess and by golly, isn't that how we got through all of our shit? Like, seriously, think about that. We did it by guess and by golly. Good gravy.
We made it.
We made it.
But
we made it with.
Yeah.
Amen. Amen. But you know, as much as I tell everybody that God has a sense of humor, and it's not quite the sense of humor that we as humans would like, it is by guess and by golly. It really is. Like, I remember laying under the school bus that we lived in, because we were dirt poor, like literally dirt poor. And my birth mother just was not able to handle a child. I think I was always a memory of something that happened that she didn't think would happen. And so she, and I noticed that to this day at 43 years of age, I don't think she hates me, but I never was something she wanted. And that's cool. Like, we're good. We still talk every now and then. Like, you know, I don't have any issues with her. She's forgiven. But I was the by guess by golly. <You know? laughs> And my whole childhood, I was never able to be good enough or loved enough or happy enough. She just didn't want much to do with me other than I just was her obligation. And that's cool, you know. Mm-hmm. But when I was a little girl, I used to hide under the school bus that we lived in because it just was safer, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't know where I was. They didn't really care. So what was your kind of strategy when you were going through the abusive relationships? I literally was beaten profusely, like crazy. Mm-hmm. No matter what I did, I was just that horrible child.
Yeah. Right. No matter what you do, you didn't do it well enough. You didn't do it fast enough.
Exactly right.
Whatever it was, you weren't smart enough, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Well, where I found myself the safest was at the Admiral Theater in West Seattle, where I grew up. For 2 hours in the matinee, in the dark, I didn't have to worry about my mother trying to kill herself. I'd saved her many times from suicide attempts. I didn't have to worry about her hurting me or being afraid. And I could, not only was it a wonderful place to be safe, but I saw in the theater the exact mother I wanted. And the exact mother I wanted was Doris Day. And I was going to find a Doris Day to be my mother. And by God, I found her. I found her in my neighborhood, the pastor's wife. And I was dazzled that my best girlfriend had the most wonderful mother in the world. And she didn't even know how good she had it. And my sister, to this day, we were laughing that we were fighting over for years over this jewelry box and Japanese jewelry box. And my sister laughed at me and said, "Well, I got the jewelry box." And I laughed at her and said, "Yeah, but I got your mother." And so we laughed. We loved it. And so I found my focus. I knew exactly the type of mother I wanted because of the Admiral Theater, and there, by the grace of God, I found Margaret Dimmock. And she was as close to being a Doris Day mother than anyone. And that's where I felt the safest. I hid in movie theaters, and it gave me a lifelong addiction to popcorn.
You know, popcorn's actually very bad for you. I don't know if anybody's ever told you that, but it's horrible for your
body.
Well,
yes. Yeah, I have GERD and colitis. I'm not supposed to eat it.
Yeah.
So.
It's the addiction.
So, you know, you do what you do. You do what you can. It was great because I did have a vision of what I wanted, and I got it, and I'm grateful.
So do you think, so let's step back, because in my spiritual world, I'm very huge about, you know, focusing and praying and manifesting and looking at, and I think that's the only way that I've survived such trauma,
mm-hmm.
is I always looked at the brighter side of things, and my
mm-hmm.
life was pretty darn, I've got a lot of choice words, but they're not appropriate for the radio. Poopy caca is the best way I could put it, right?
Yeah, that springs to mind.
Right?
Right, but exactly.
So as a child, you always thought of Doris Day, or did you just think of, like, the positive aspects of the little things that would pop into your life? Because I think you're my age or maybe a little older.
I'm just two weeks younger than dirt, so I'm
good for
a senior citizen.
So you didn't have TV either, or cell phones, or any of this, you know, pop culture stuff that these kids have nowadays. So
no,
you had bikes,
no.
Baby, and pretends, and fairies, and books, yeah?
Right, yeah, that's
maybe
what I had.
Maybe a swing set, like, yeah.
I had a swing set, yeah. But my faith was manifested itself so often as a child. I heard and felt direction to do certain things which turned out to be advantageous or safety. I listened to the inner risings that happened in my life, and when I followed that inner rising and that voice that was in my heart, I came through. And so I consider my faith more of a nuts and bolts, hand-on kind of real thing that I hold with both hands, because it's so clearly demonstrated to me that that connection was saving my life, and it has throughout my young and adult life. And so my faith is just nuts and bolts and daily living, and I wouldn't have made it without God.
And I appreciate that and respect that 100%, because I swear to goodness gravy, if God and I didn't have conversations, I'm not sure I would have made it through my story either. And
right,
and I always
right.
joke about it. It's like somebody will say, "Jesus Christ." I'm like, "Where?" I'm like, "I'm just joking." And I said, "No, where is he? He keeps changing his cell phone number. I've been texting him all day."
That's good. I got to remember that.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's like, seriously, hello. I'm one of your many, many phone calls today.
Yes.
So let's talk about what is, you know, the dive deep. I want to get a little deeper into your story, because not only are you a beautiful soul, but quite honestly, you and I were raised without TVs or cell phones or, you know, Facebook ads and all that nonsense. We were raised kind of isolated. And I want you to share, if you feel comfortable, what isolation means to you, because I can tell you what isolation means to me, but I'm a few years younger. And again, the children nowadays, they have isolation, but it's just very bizarrely different. It's like Rod Sterling, Twilight Zone different. So talk to us about, truly, it is. It's like they're isolated in Facebook and Snapchat and all of these applications. And Rod Sterling called this how many years ago, like 1952?
Yeah.
But you and I, we had bikes, and when the lamp post went out at, 7 o'clock at night, or if your middle name was called, because I'm Southern, if my middle name was called, I knew she was going to beat the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When your full name is called, you're dead meat.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yes. Yes.
Totally. So talk about isolation for you. What was that like?
Well, I experienced literal isolation when I was fighting the last court battle with my biological mother to have her sign relinquishment papers so that I could be a foster child. It was at age 13. It was the third round of court fights, and I was in the Seattle Youth Center, which is the juvie hall, but I was in the part that's for the young ones for protection. Well, I came down with strep throat, and they put me in the infirmary in isolation so that I wouldn't infect any of the other children. But then third place got too busy, and there weren't enough beds. So for a month and a half, I was in isolation, and I had a radio, and I had magazines, and I had a blue light that I looked at night, and I just prayed that the good Lord would help me, that I was totally alone, and I was fighting for my life in court, and I just prayed that I would figure out what I needed to do in order to fix this. And it went on and on and on for the longest time. And finally, one night, I was just crying. I couldn't take it anymore. I was so alone and frightened. And I heard the voice, and it said, "You get help now." And the next day, my caseworker showed up. I hadn't seen her in over a month, and she said she apologized for letting things get in the way, and that I was sick. And she said, "I can't understand why I can't get your mother to sign the relinquishment papers." And I said, "Well, I know something that'll make her change her mind." And I told the counselor, my counselor, how she had brought my stepfather into my room, and he touched me and he molested me, and she stood there and watched and never stopped it.
You're kidding.
I told the counselor that, my caseworker that, and she hugged me, and then she said, "Well, I think I have what I need now." So she told Zodi that I would tell the court the truth about how she let men into my bedroom when I was younger than 13. I was 11. Mm. And she signed the papers, and I got released into the custody of the Dimmicks and as a foster child, and my life began at 13. That was the most isolated, literally isolated, I had ever been. It was the darkest time for me, and I listened to the voice and acted appropriately. And when I lost my mind in 2005 and I couldn't remember anything from day to day, my husband was afraid to leave me because to go to work and on trips because I couldn't remember anything. And so that was really, really dark for me, and I felt so isolated from everybody else that was functioning. And so I heard the voice. It said, write. And that's what I did. And that's how I handled my isolation.
So it's interesting to hear that it's possible, and it's not, you know, you're old enough and you've passed the story to have this conversation, which is a blessing. So thank you, Zoe, for sharing. But it's unusual for people to say, my mother allowed and sat there and watched.
Yes, it's usually just somebody. It was incredibly painful. And the other thing that set me off, that said in my mind, it's either her or me, was the time that she decided, she was a barbiturates addict and an alcoholic. She had her traumas as well. She decided in the middle of the night one summer night that she wanted to go to Wenatchee, which is like 4 hours away from Seattle, due east, and in the state of Washington. And she was swacked. And halfway in the mountains in the middle of the night, she had a seizure and pulled over. And she said, I had to drive the rest of the way. I was 11 years old, and it was a 1952 Buick, a huge convertible. And it was so big, and I was so little, I could only see to drive us in the dark through the mountains by looking at the space underneath the steering wheel and above the dash. And I could just barely touch the pedal with the tip of my pink tennis shoe. And I drove all that night, and I cried. I was so afraid. I thought I'd get us killed. And by the time the sun came up, I was so relieved. But then I found myself in the traffic. I couldn't pull over. And Zodi, she woke up, and she said, well, take this next right turn. And I couldn't see where I was supposed to go. And I was in this car, and I was barreling down on this woman. I see her face, and she's screaming a big round O with her mouth because I'm barreling down on her. I get the car turned, and she says, turn again. And there was construction and cars and trucks, and I couldn't think. And she turned the car, she grabbed the wheel and turned the car, and we just barely bumped a concrete barrier. And I just sat there. I shook, and I was covered in sweat, and my mouth was dry. I thought I was going to throw up. And she turns to me and said, get out, goddammit, get out. How could you be so stupid? You bumped the car. And so, what am I going to tell your father? And she parks the car. And I stood there in the alleyway, scared, and thought, it's either her or me. It's either her or me. And I remembered that. I had nightmares from that for years. I still don't like to drive. So, but that is a true thing. I could never be good enough for her. But I found a family that taught me that I was good enough. Yeah.
You know, and I'm so grateful that you did. I was never, and still to this day, you know, she still throws her punches at me. And I just kind of scratch my head going, seriously? All of these years, you know, I don't care. At this point, I don't care if I'm good enough for you. You know, I don't even care if I'm good enough for my neighbor. Like, I'm happy to be who I am. But it's dumbfounding how that is kind of a weight. It's still an anchor. After all of the healing, after all of the challenges, after all of the work that you do, it's still a trigger, isn't it? Like if your biological mother were to be able to come back and say something really stupid, because that's what they do. It's stupid. You would be triggered.
That hurtful.
And
yeah.
And it hurt, but it hurts because all you want to do is be loved by the person who brought you into this world. And and honestly, I give kudos to my birth mother because it was such a tenuous, painful relationship. I think I'm a really good mom in comparison because I can't relate to anything that she did to me as a child. And I look at my daughter and I'm like, you're freaking amazing. Okay, you rolled your eyes and slammed the door at me. Okay, you're 13. Whatever.
I just told my son he has to be on the psychiatrist's couch just like I did. You know,
right,
I did the best I could.
Exactly. But even now, you know, in your relationships with people, do you feel that there are certain triggers that make it difficult to have those relationships?
I like to treat each person as an individual that comes into my life, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt just so far.
Right.
But if I find that my dog doesn't like them or there's something toxic about them,
right,
I don't continue that relationship. I prefer to work with people who want to be healthy, who want to help other people, who appreciate what they have and appreciate other people. And I just don't stay with that kind of negative input. I want to be with people who see the glass half full. And I think that's the healthier way to live. If that makes any sense.
Well, it makes perfect sense because you and I, we float on the same boat in that regard. I refuse, like I'll give you a couple chances, but if I feel that you're judgmental or if I feel that you are negative or you want to hurt other people or feel that other people should be demised in some way, I let you go. I cut that boat. You float out to sea and you're good. Like, I have no interest in that. We are who we are. We're made as we are. And I'm a huge, 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 huge advocate to the ideology that if you cut everybody open, we're all the same color. We're all from the same place. You know, and genuinely, if you were to, and it sounds a little dark, but we are genuinely all broken. We all have issues. We all are dysfunctional in some way.
Right.
But we can make it through, and we can be a team player. And being a team player means that we look at each other, we hug each other, we're like, okay, we got this. And we just do. And I believe that no matter how deep and dark your storm is, the worst case scenario is you use your shoulder blades to walk. You know, you're on your ass, you're on your back, you can't get up, you're tired, you're exhausted. It's been a shit show from hell. You can still move forward even if you use your shoulder blades, even if you use your elbows, even if you use your knees. We can do this.
If you're walking on your lips.
Amen, sister. Amen. Our earlobes can move. You can wiggle that shit. We can move.
Right. Well, what did they say? The motivation of moving is when the place that you're in is more painful than the thought of moving is.
Amen.
If you're in that always was a good trigger for me. If I'm in pain, then there's something wrong with my situation, and I have to look at it because my body reacts to the stressors like a tuning fork. Like I said, I have GERD and colitis and musculoskeletal issues. They said when a child is abused at a young age like that, like us, that it changes the wiring in the brain, and it's going to affect the human body for the remainder of the life. Well, in the ACE studies, it's called Adverse Childhood Experiences. It was a medical review that the Kaiser and the government did, and they found that there are 10 pressures on kids, and that changed the wiring in their thinking and life. And I've got 9 out of the 10. And
right.
But I wasn't going to be designated by that. I wasn't going to be the kid with the big ACE number. I was going to be me. And I was, even though I have warts and weird things, I'm going to be the best possible me I can be. And I found my joy. And I got through that because I had resilience. And that's what resilience is. You and I have resilience, or we wouldn't be here. And that's the good news. We can have resilience. We can move on, even if it's our shoulder blades, even if I'm only walking on my lips. But I can make some movement. I can be resilient. And that is such a good thing, because it's resilience that saves people from adverse childhood experiences. When a child sees that what they live is crazy, but they can see another person that it works for them, that's resilience. That's why I wanted Doris Day. I worked for Doris Day. I wanted that image of that wonderful mother, and I kept it in my head because I knew my life was crazy. And because of the resilience, I made it.
Well, I want to, you know, we're running out of time. It's very unfortunate because you and I could talk for days. I just absolutely adore you. But I want to kind of put out there that there had to have been in some way, shape, or form. So I don't know if you've ever listened to the show before, but I really believe that I'm a farmer. I plant seeds, and I hope that I am able to propagate those seeds in some way, shape, or form. So by sharing these stories and sharing these tricks and tips to live life better and be better about yourself and be forgiving to yourself, one day it's going to be a beautiful garden. That's the purpose of the show. And
excellent.
I believe strongly that, because I was extremely isolated as a child, my birth mother was very paranoid when I was growing up, and so I spent a lot of time in my room or somebody's room, and wasn't allowed to have sleepovers, wasn't allowed to have friends, wasn't allowed to talk on the phone. I got my ass beat when I talked on the phone. It was, you know, just all kinds of stuff. And I believe that the few people in school or at church, when I was allowed to go to church, and just things like, you know, grocery store clerks and whatever, there were people that influenced my progression in a compassionate way that I don't think that she realized or understood. And I just think it's kind of the angel's way of being like, hey, here's an influence, here's a choice, you can have this choice, here's somebody to look up to, like your Doris Day. We didn't have TV, so I didn't have Doris Day. But there were people that were like, hey, I live this way. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know, you can live with a man and not be beaten, and you can, you know, not have your face shoved into a fucking oven. My birth mother went through hell, and I was witness, but she shared that hell. And my question to you is, do you think that Doris Day was kind of that seed that allowed you to be more enlightened versus where you were? Does that make sense?
Yes. If I understand your statement, I believe that Doris Day was just a symbol of what I was looking for, just the symbol of a good, loving, honest...
Of hope.
Yes, it was my hope. And I knew the actress was the actress, but I wanted the qualities that she demonstrated on film. And when I came across and I finally saw that there can be manifested in the real world those angels that you can come across, I grabbed it with both hands. And I wanted to live my life like she lived her life. Although now, as an adult looking back on my adopted family, there were warts in their lives as well. But I figure if I'm tacking between two concepts, I consider Zodi on one shoulder and Margaret on the other. If I tack between the two extremes, I'm doing just fine. And I'll take what I love from Zodi. She gave me love of animals. She gave me love of the arts. She could sing like an angel, but I'll just take what I like, and I will just leave the rest of it all. And so I found my hope in that image of Doris Day. I found it in Margaret Dimmock, and it saved my life. So I'm just really, really grateful.
So, my love, I have to tell you, you have 2 minutes left of the show. Can you believe how fast that went? It's like a carousel ride on high. I know, 2 minutes and 4 seconds. Jeez, good gravy. All right, lovey girl. I want you to tell us where we can find you, what your book is titled. This is the place where you get to tell us everything that you want to know in 2 minutes.
Oh, my. Okay.
No pressure.
Well, I'm Zoe Nicklaus. And that's Zoe, last name Nicklaus. My book is Driving in the Dark, a Childhood Memoir. And like I said, you can find me on the internet, zoenicklaus.com. People can talk with me there. It has pictures of my life with the early on with the Dimmocks and bits of my story that I read into the website so they can hear my voice and what I've done. And anybody can just, you know, call me up and we can chat. And I do a lot of inspirational speaking, and I do my show for charities. And like I said, I'm just one of the luckiest people you'll ever meet.
Amen, sister. I just wish I could hug and squeeze you so tight. I am so proud of your journey. I'm so proud of your awesomeness and how you've been able to come out of the storm as a rainbow. You are truly a rainbow.
Thank you so much. I'll tell my son to think of me as a rainbow. It'll be
That's
nice.
It. That's right.
Well, you take care. I am so grateful for chatting with you.
You are a beautiful soul, and I really hope that we get to circle around again, and maybe if I ever get out your way, your state is actually one of my favorite states in our union,
All right.
in our democracy. I absolutely love, love, love Oregon. But I hope to see you, and you know what? Feel free if you come up with another book or another idea, or if you just want to chat, let me know. It would be beautiful. You're a beautiful soul.
Well, thank you, Rusty. And thank you, and God bless.
God bless. Have a beautiful day.
Bye-bye.
So we just heard from Zoe Nicklaus. She is fantastic. And we, oh, my gosh, I cannot even tell you how excited I am about what I do. And all of these people, they're amazing and beautiful people. And if it wasn't for technology, we would not have the opportunity to hear all of these stories and be inspired and re-inspire ourselves to inspire other people. Next week, we get to meet my friend Mark Fernandez. Oh, my God, even bigger than that, it's April. Can you believe April is already around the corner? Mark Fernandez is a Reiki master, animal healer, personal healer. He's just a bomb, and he's got a beautiful story to tell us about how he does what he does and why he does what he does. I'm off to make a beautiful stir fry for my girlfriend, Susan, and my beautiful daughter, Chloe, who's going to be a freshman in high school too soon, way too fast. It goes by so fast. Know that I love you. Know that you're beautiful. Know that this world would not be round without you and do something good. Drive 5 miles slower. Take 5 minutes longer getting out of bed. And you know what? Hug 5 seconds tighter, because life is beautiful and I'm glad you're in it.
Living and vibing with Rusty.